Great to have you along today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and we're going to be talking about smoking foods. Now, it's not just for brisket. Our guest today has recipes to smoke everything from cocktails to dessert and everything in between. And the guest is Stephen Reichlin. He is a James Beard Award-winning authority on grilling and smoking. He hosts the PBS shows Primal Grill, Barbecue University, and Project Smoke. And his latest book is called Project Smoke, 7 Steps to Smoked Food Nirvana, plus 100 irresistible recipes from classics to adventurous. Maybe you've tried to smoke food. How did it go? Join the conversation by calling in at 1-800-642-1234. You can also email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page, titled The Larry Mueller Show. And Stephen Reichlin, welcome to the show.
Hello.
Great to have you along.
You, you guys are, Wisconsin's one of my favorite states, and I love visiting, and I love eating your bratwurst and your amazing cheese.
No, I'll tell you what, we've got some great brats and great cheese here, and other things as well. But and I know you're going to be in Milwaukee and Madison the end of June. We'll talk about that a little bit later on in the program. But I tell you, right up front, I looked at these recipes and I looked at the photos. And I want to do every one of them. All the photos are just wonderful. You have written a number of books about grilling, and they, I think most of them include recipes for smoking food. But you're dedicating a whole book to it.
Well, I am. And the reason is simple. I write about barbecue, and I touch on barbecued foods in all of my books. But while all barbecue is smoked, not all smoked foods are barbecue. And I think this, for me, sort of set up the premise for the book. It made me realize that there was still a very vast topic that I had not fully explored and that I wanted to, you know, I wanted to write about in Project Smoke.
Yeah, it's great. What misconceptions do people have about smoking food?
Well, I mean, I think, first of all, not all smoked foods are barbecue, you know. And we have a saying sort of in the barbecue world, and that is cooking low and slow. You've probably heard that. That is, you cook at a low heat, relatively low heat, for a long period of time. And while the low and slow method will give you terrific brisket, great pork shoulder, great ribs, in fact, you can't cook Norwegian or Nova Scotia style salmon low and slow. That actually involves a process called cold smoking, wherein you smoke the food but not actually cook it. On the other extreme, if you try and cook turkey or chicken low and slow, you'll get very delicious succulent meat, but the skin will come out like shoe leather, rubbery, papery, leathery. So for poultry, I recommend a technique I call smoke roasting, which is cooking the food at a much higher temperature, more like 350 to 400 degrees, and that will actually crisp up the skin.
We have callers, many callers already with questions and comments. And
fantastic. I love callers.
Let's go to Phil in Hebron, Illinois. Phil, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi, you guys. My favorite topic, barbecue.
Hey, Phil. How are you?
I am fine, sir. I do low and slow. I do baby back ribs on a grill. And the last time I cooked them just for laughs, because I smoked them for quite a while, they always turn out great. I use hickory wood. Went on the internet, and there is a professor with a PhD in chemistry out of, I believe, Pennsylvania, that says what wood you're using is irrelevant. It's the smoke reacting with the meat that's creating the meat, the smoke ring and things like that. I always use hickory, and I don't buy that. What do you think?
Well, I think there's a little bit of truth to what the professor said, far be it from me to disagree with the professor. You know, we food writers tend to wax grandiloquent about the differences between hickory smoke and cherry wood smoke and applewood smoke. And while there are minute differences, they're very subtle. And it's not like when you smoke with cherry, you're going to taste cherries, or when you smoke with apple, you're going to, you know, it's going to feel like biting into an apple. What's far more important is how you dose the smoke. And that should be a little bit at a time rather than, you know, if a recipe, let's say, calls for 12 cups of wood chips over the space of 8 hours, you should really dose those chips a cup and a half per hour. Now, what does a typical person with a Y chromosome do? Okay, so we say to ourselves, well, you know, let's just put all 12 chips, cups of chips in at once, right? Get the job done the first 5 minutes, and that will give you very bitter food. So subtle difference between the various types of wood. And, I'm very glad you brought this up, because I think that there's sort of a misplaced notion that somehow pit masters decided, you know, the pit masters in Texas said, well, let's see, we could use apple, or we could use cherry, or we could use oak. Let's use oak. I mean, in fact, historically, people used the wood that grew in the area where they live and where they cook. And that's why you find alder in the Pacific Northwest. It's why you find maple in New England. It's why you find hickory in the South. What I would say to you is that if you love your ribs, and they sure sound delicious to me, stick with hickory. You're doing it right.
Absolutely. You talk about, and oh, we've got so many questions here from listeners, but you talk about the various types of ways you can smoke, and it. I thought, you know, the cold water method, the various grills and so forth that you can use. I've got a Weber Summit grill. It costs about as much as my first car, and I've got a couple of Weber kettles for charcoal that are 26 inches, and according to you, I can use any of them.
Well, if you own a Weber kettle grill, you own a smoker. You have no more fancier equipment to get than that. The whole key is to use half as much charcoal as you usually would. Set your grill up for indirect grilling. That'll enable you to bring the temperature down. When you mention a Weber Summit, I'm assuming that's a Weber Summit gas grill?
Yes. And it's actually, I have it hooked up to the natural gas line in my home, so it's right next to the house.
Yeah, well, that's great, and it's very convenient. It's very difficult to smoke on a gas grill, to be honest with you. Because of the nature of the venting in the back of the grill, most of the smoke goes pouring out. But I do have two recipes in Project Smoke that are extremely well suited to a gas grill. Both involve using a cedar plank. Now,
yes.
Cedar planking has been around for a while. I'm going to perhaps shock your listeners when I tell you how I do it, because conventional wisdom calls for soaking the plank to keep it from catching fire, right?
Yeah.
Well, what I like to do is I actually don't soak it. I put it on a grill over high heat to char the plank, to actually get it smoking and singed at the edges. Then I put either, one recipe is a trout that's wrapped in bacon, or another is a camembert cheese. Then I put that on the plank, put it back on the gas grill. So you're actually, in a controlled way, burning the plank, which produces this wonderful cedar smoke flavor.
And both of the photos of those are just, oh, they look so good.
You know, we spent a lot of, I'm so glad you picked that up, because we spent a lot of time and money working on that photography. And I think we have an amazing photographer. And, you know, cook's books, in a way, they should give you visual guideposts as to where you're trying to go.
Let's turn to Mike in Duluth, Minnesota next. Mike, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, guys.
Hi, Mike.
Hi, how are you?
Doing great. How are you?
Good. Thanks for doing the show, because it's something that people are really into, and I've been doing it for a long time. My question for you is, you guys, is I've done cold smoking for fish for many, many years, primarily herring and trout and whitefish. And can you comment a little bit about hanging fish for smoking versus racking them?
Yeah, I mean, that's an interesting question. So to me, the world's master fish smoker It's a guy who lives in London, and his name is Hansen. And he smokes all of his salmon in a vertical position. And I think the argument would be that when it's free-hanging, you're not putting any pressure on the flesh, there's no weight, you're not going to crush one side. His salmon is absolutely spectacular. So that would be an argument for smoking your fish in a vertical position. However, then I'm thinking about the smoked herring, the smoked shrimp, the smoked salmon that I had on Bornholm Island in Denmark, which about 100 years ago was the epicenter of Europe's smoked fish industry. And there the fish actually is laid on its side, and it's smoked over a mixture of juniper and an alder. Absolutely spectacular. So I guess the bottom line is that the orientation of the fish probably doesn't matter all that much.
There we go.
Sorry about that, guys.
Thanks, Mike.
Come on.
Appreciate the call. Oh, Penny in Sparta. Hi, thanks for calling.
Hi.
Hi, Penny.
I just couldn't help myself. I had to call in. Every year for, I think it was 6 years last year, my dad and I started a smoked meat competition that we threw kind of an annual party that got larger and larger every year. And a certain number of guests would judge our smoked meats between one or the other and to see who won. And whoever lost the 1 year would pick the meat for the following year. And not only have I learned a ton of stuff doing this with my dad, but it's really developed into something that I think I'll, carry with me forever. So thanks for the show, and it's giving me lots of ideas. So.
Oh, and I love your idea of the competition.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Well, thank you. And,
competitive.
It gets pretty competitive, I bet.
Yeah. Well, I'm speaking to you in Kansas City right now. And, this is the home of the Kansas City Royal, which may be the world's largest barbecue contest. But there is definitely a cutthroat element to all of this. You raised another point I'm really glad you did, which is when you barbecue, you're not barbecuing alone. You're not doing it for one or two people. It is a communal activity. It is a party. And I think that really gets to the heart of one reason we love barbecue so much.
I completely agree.
Thank you so much, Penny.
Thanks for calling, Penny.
I appreciate your call. What about you? Join in with your questions or comments or maybe experiences to share. Penny had a great one there at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@WPR.org or post on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. That's the title of our page. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer, here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. At 11:45 today, our photography expert will stop by to talk about some new cameras and take your photography questions. So stay with us for that. Right now, having a lot of fun talking with Stephen Reichlin, James Beard Award-winning authority on grilling and smoking, and he has a new book out. It's called Project Smoke, 7 Steps to Smoke Food Nirvana, plus 100 irresistible recipes from classic slam dunk brisket to adventurous smoked bacon bourbon apple crisp. I took a look at that recipe and I said, I have got to try, especially after I saw the end result, I've got to try that one.
That was the first smoked dessert I did for the book. And I knew there was going to be a dessert chapter because one of my goals in writing Project Smoke, to cover the classics and tell you how to make the best Texas beef brisket there is, the best Kansas City style ribs. But I also wanted to really push the limits, take you out of the box, help you smoke foods you never dreamt you could smoke.
Well, you've certainly done that as well. And one of the smokers is so cool is that hand smoker that you use for maybe cocktail recipes.
Yeah, it's called a smoking gun. The category are called handheld smokers. It's a smoking gun. And it's a terrific device for people who may live in apartments or condos and don't have access to the outside. It looks like a pistol where the you load the top of it with hardwood sawdust, and it has a rubber tube that comes off one end. You fire it up, and it directs a blast of fragrant wood smoke at whatever food you're cooking. Now, if you want to use it to smoke a cocktail, you put the cocktail either in a shaker or a pitcher, cover the top with plastic wrap, you insert this tube, and you trap smoke just above the level of the cocktail. Leave it for 5 minutes, stir the smoke in, repeat as often as necessary. I use it to make a Smoky Mary, which is my smoke version of a Bloody Mary, Smoke Manhattan, which is awesome by beyond belief. I even use that device to smoke ice cream.
That is amazing to me. Oh, man. You know, what do you think about wild grapevine? Dan is for smoking. Dan in Mount Morris emailed to say that wild grapevines, in his opinion, is the best wood for smoking.
Well, you know, grapevines are the traditional fuel for grilling throughout France and Italy. And they have a wonderful, sweet, slightly tart Venice smoke. Grapevines would be terrific for smoking, too. I think it would give you a very different flavor than a hickory or a mesquite.
Bill in New Richmond has something for us. Hi, Bill. Thanks for calling.
Well, good morning.
Hi, Bill.
How are you?
We're doing great.
Couldn't be better. How about you?
Good. Great. I got to say, I watch your show every time I can on public TV.
Well, thank you.
I'm gonna roast a hog, a whole hog. I built a roaster. We usually use just charcoal, but I want to put some hickory in it. Do you think I need hickory chips, or can I use hickory wood?
If you are roasting a whole hog, you're going to want to use either logs or wood chunks added to your charcoal. Chips are going to burn up way too fast. Chunks are good, or even if you can get yourself some hickory logs and you toss one or two logs on that fire under the hog and let that smoke waft up, that's going to be really amazing.
It's a long process. I've done about 10 of them myself over time, but what else did you have, Bill? I'm sorry.
Should I burn it so it burns quite hot, or burn it slow?
I would burn it slow. And actually, there's a pit master in North Carolina named Ed Mitchell who soaks his logs in a half-and-half mixture of vinegar and water.
Hmm.
Adds a couple of diced onions. He calls that seasoning the seasoning wood. So that's pretty cool, too.
Yeah. So good
Thank
luck with it, Bill.
Much.
Yeah, good luck with it. Thanks a lot for calling. You know, I have to admit,
Thank you.
I have to admit, though, after standing over the hog all day long, I wasn't very hungry for it.
Yeah, you know, I think a lot of us get into this business because we enjoy feeding people, and we enjoy that as much as eating.
You're exactly right.
Yeah, it's because think about activities in life that bring you satisfaction, right? I mean, what more gracious, generous activity, gesture from the heart can you make than feeding somebody?
Yeah. Jason in Eau Claire, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hey, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, sure. Jason.
My daughter loves my ribs, and I think I'm okay at it, but there's kind of two schools that say to boil them and take the membrane off. Now, I'm not talking about smoking, just on the grill.
Yeah.
And boil them for like an hour or so, in onions and beer or whatever, and then taking the membrane off before that. And then I heard there was another school that says don't do anything, don't boil them, just cook them real slow.
Do not boil your ribs. If I may just jump in right here before I hear anything else. Do not boil your ribs. That is an act against nature. It's a sacrilege. And it's also completely unnecessary. If you think about the process of making soup, what do? You put meat on the bones in water. You boil it. You take all the flavor out of the meat on the bones, and you put it in the broth. And that's exactly what happens when you boil ribs. On the other hand, if you season the ribs with a rub, if you cook low and slow, like we've been talking about earlier, you'll achieve the maximum tenderness, or the appropriate tenderness, I should say, because you do not actually want a rib to be fall off the bone tender. That is a misconception. You want ribs that will be have a little chew to them. That's why God gave you teeth.
I completely understand, because people are, oh, but they'll fall off the bone. And I'm like, I don't know if that's right, because you're losing flavor at some point when it's like that, I feel like. So
You're getting agreement on this end. Thanks a lot, Jason, for calling. Appreciate your call. What about you? Question or comment? Join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I'd love to hear from you. And I see your book, by the way. Jill was letting me know that it hit the New York Times bestseller list. So congratulations.
Yeah. Thank you. I'm pretty excited about that. I've been out on tour for, this last stretch, I've been out for about 4 weeks now. And it is really nice when that works out.
Steve emailed in to ask if there's a way to smoke cheese, and if so, what type of cheese smoke works best? We talked a little about cheese, but...
Excellent question. So first of all, with cheese, you want to be in the realm of cold smoking. And this is a technique wherein you smoke a food without actually cooking it. Why is that so important with cheese? Well, if you hot smoke cheese, it's going to melt. So a number of before we get to the cheese, number of strategies to use. One is to get a smoker that has a cold smoking attachment, which basically separates the fire from the food. Bradley, for example, on their electric smoker, they have a cold smoking attachment. You can also use that smoking gun I was just talking about earlier. If you were to smoke, let's say, on a kettle grill or on a offset barrel smoker, you want to use as little charcoal as possible, generate as much smoke as possible. In a kettle grill, you put a few coals at one end, you put your cheese at the other end. And I would actually put the cheese, I'd fill a roasting pan with ice, and I'd put a wire rack over it. I'd put my cheese on the wire rack over that pan full of ice. Again, idea, bring the temperature down.
And you'd have the not directly over the fire then, or would you?
No. You don't want to be over. You want to be as far away from the fire as possible. Now, in terms of what cheeses to smoke, well, I mean, Wisconsin cheddar obviously comes to mind. Smoked cheddar is wonderful. There's another interesting cheese smoking technique that's kind of fun to do, and it's called hay smoking. Italians do this when they smoke mozzarella cheese. So you get yourself a bunch of hay or straw, and you make a big mound at one side of your grill. Again, you're on a kettle grill. You put the cheese on the other side. You light the straw. You cover the grill. You get dense clouds of smoke very quickly. And the hay smoke, it's different. Lighter smoke flavor than the wood, but it's kind of has almost kind of an herbal undertone, but it's really delicious.
It sounds wonderful to me. One of my favorite things to eat is a deviled egg, and you have a nice recipe for smoking deviled eggs, which I thought, oh, that would be fun to try.
You know, smoke has eggs have a natural affinity for smoke and fire. And I've actually had grilled eggs in Vietnam, in Thailand, Cambodia. I've had smoked eggs in Israel. And if you think about it, an egg, it's a perfect foil. I mean, it's white like a blank canvas. The flavor is mild. And it just begs for the evocative, haunting flavor of wood smoke.
And is it a very strong wood smoke, or is it a milder wood smoke?
Well, you know, again, we're aiming for. I love the saying, you know, you want your food kissed by smoke, not overpowered by smoke. So you want it to be perceptible. When you're smoking eggs, you're actually looking for this little golden patina of wood smoke on the egg. Then, you know, you have it. But there, too, I like to place the eggs I'm smoking over on a rack over a pan of ice, because if you work in too hot an environment, you're going to make the egg whites rubbery.
Yeah, that makes sense. Josh and Madison, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Oh, I just want to tell your guest about the smoker that I built up north. I basically made a regular smoker underground and dug a 4x4x4 pit and then lined it with fire. And then I put the grate on top of that, and then that got covered up with an old chimney cap. So it was completely underground. And then I ran 2-inch pipe off to the side and up into the gutted old grill, and that would be my cold smoker.
Oh, yeah, that sounds like a perfect configuration for a cold smoker.
How does it work, Josh?
Well, the smoke enters the pipe. You actually have to build a separate little fire around the pipe to get it to draw the smoke up through the old grill. And the old grill just has no guts in it. It was an old gas grill. So then the cold smoke sits in the grill where you can put your cheese or your fish. And then you've got a fire going under under the ground where you can do your pork shoulder, your ribs, whatever else.
Wow, that sounds amazing.
You got a photo of that, Josh?
I don't down here. I'll have to take a picture of it for you, Larry, next time I'm up north.
Yeah, next time you're up, take a photo and shoot it onto my Facebook page. I'd love to see it. It really sounds cool.
And you know what's extraordinary here is, listen, we've been, I'm a Yankee from New England. I'm talking to you in Wisconsin about barbecue, which is a southern thing. We got people calling in with all kinds of crazy smokers. We have hot smoking, cold smoking. People are so passionate about this subject.
I definitely agree. Josh, thanks a lot. I really appreciate your call.
Thank you, Josh.
You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Give a call with your questions and comments. You know, you have this monster pork chop recipe, smoked and grilled in the style of Butcher and the Boar.
That's right. That's a recipe that's a restaurant in Minneapolis. And, you know, pork chops present a special challenge for the smoker because the meat is extremely lean. And in a typical smoker, it has a tendency to dry out. Now, this chop uses a technique that is found a lot in my book, Project Smoke, and on the TV show Project Smoke, and that is brining. And what you do when you brine is you soak a meat in a saline solution. My particular brine is equal parts salt, sugar, and water. And sometimes I add what's called pink salt or prog powder. It's a curing salt. And what the brine does is that the meat will actually absorb some of that liquid. So then when you smoke it, it will stay moist. Plus, the salt flavor in the brine gives you extra flavor. I mean, brining is terrific. So what would I brine? I would brine pork chops. I would brine turkey breast. That's another sort of high risk of drying out type of food that can be made guaranteed succulent with brining.
Yeah. I use, for turkey, sometimes I'll use, and I don't have all the ingredients in my mind here right at the moment. I've got them written down somewhere, but pineapple juice. This is from an old friend of mine, Leroy Frankie. Pineapple juice and beer and some garlic. And boy, it turns out moist in the end.
It really does. That's a very valuable technique. I like to talk about the three windows of opportunity when flavoring smoked food. So first, when the food is raw, that would be a rub or a brine or a marinade. Then when the food is actually smoking, and any time you swab ribs with a mop sauce or you brush, let's say, smoked pork chops with melted butter, you are working in the zone where you're adding flavor at the same time as you're smoking. Finally, when the food comes off, you might serve it with a barbecue sauce or a salsa, and that would be your third window of opportunity. And very often you'll layer these flavorings. So you might start with a brine or a rub. Then you might do a mop sauce. And you might finish up with a glazing of barbecue sauce and a direct grill over a hot fire. The thing that makes smoked foods and especially barbecue really great is this layering of flavor.
Yeah, I definitely agree with that. Sherman in Green Bay, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a little thing that I do with the wood. I kind of season it up with liquid smoke that I make in the winter. and I cut a lot of wood, and I get out a, I bought a chainsaw just for that purpose, and I put a power sharp blade on it, and I use vegetable oil in the oiler, and I cut my wood the rip saw way, and it makes a spaghetti-like noodle out of the shaving. And I combine all the shavings, and I stick it in one of the fire pits that I made, and it's got an oversized hat on it, and in the winter I catch it in a tray, and then I take it, and it, when the fire is going, it drips down icicles onto the tray, and then I melt that all down, strain it, and it's like liquid smoke.
My God, does that sound good.
And then, well, it took me a lot of years to kind of perfect the amount of wood, you know, maple, apple, red oak, and some hickory.
Yep.
And I combined all those shavings, and after that process, I come up with liquid smoke. So if we're on the grill, if I'm on the grill somewhere, you know, not running the smoker or whatever, I just take a shot. It's really strong. I take a shot or two of that, and I just kind of spread it around the charcoal, and you get that real woody. It turns out awesome.
Oh.
So if anybody wants to go through a long process like that, give it a try. It's well worth it.
Oh, man.
You know what? I'll tell you what I'm hearing. I think when most people think of barbecuing and grilling, they think of Texas, they think of the Carolinas, of Memphis. But I'm putting Wisconsin at the top of that list. You guys sound like you are very serious smokers.
Oh, that's...
Oh, yeah. We like our smoke up here.
Thank you so much.
Now, what I'm curious, yeah. What are you smoking, actually, with this incredible setup?
Everything. I even potatoes.
I love
the vegetables.
Potatoes.
I have my own little pans that have you know, little gaps in them and let the smoke in on the pans. And a buffalo brisket that we did last year was out of this world for some people that came up from Arizona.
Oh,
and, it was awesome finish. With that little bit of extra, you know, liquid smoke on the end, we just popped the cap off everything and let it go for maybe 15, 20 minutes while it rested.
Now, how about seafood?
Fantastic.
Do you guys smoke a lot? Do you smoke a lot of seafood, a lot of fish?
Tons of fish. Salmon, walleye, whitefish, everything.
Oh, man.
Yeah. It's well... Most of my fish that I smoke, I only use three or four charcoal briquettes and a hunk of soaked applewood or maple or whatever that it's, you know, I mean, I've got this stuff laying around in water for years.
Uh-huh.
Where the water actually get along, once you introduce the air, it starts to rot. But other than that, you know.
It's fine. Oh, man. Well, I'm telling you that we've got some pretty inventive people listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, that's for sure.
I'll say.
Thank you so much, Sherman, for calling. Appreciate it. You know, speaking of contraptions, we've heard about some really cool ones. I opened up the book to your book to Montreal Meatballs with Maple Mustard Barbecue Sauce, which sounded so good. And then I look at the photo. You've got a meatball holder that you use that I don't know. I guess I don't know where I've been living, but I didn't know those things existed, and I'm going to get one.
Well, it's funny. You know, in addition to writing books and doing the Project Smoke TV show on PBS, I also have a line of products. And that was a product we designed for grilling meatballs because, you know, my basic premise is if something tastes good baked, fried, or sautéed, it tastes even better grilled or smoked. And a meatball rack like that is exactly what you need to be able to cook a couple dozen meatballs on a grill at one time.
So go to your website to order one of those?
Absolutely. And my website is barbecuebible.com. That's BarbecueBible.com. And while you're on the website, not just for ordering products, but we have a newsletter you can sign up for. We have a recipe of the week that we'll send you. All of this is completely free, by the way. A huge recipe bank. There's a forum where you can post questions and get answers. It's a great resource for anybody who's passionate about this stuff.
And I think we have a link on, Jill, do we have a link? Yeah, she's nodding. Of course I do. She has a link on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. So if nothing else, you can just click there and it'll take you right to it.
Excellent.
I have to go there myself because I want to get some of. I want to get that meatball holder. That just looks so cool.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Well, Brian, before we go any further, I know you have book signings. You're in Milwaukee on June 29th. You're at Boswell Book Company, if I'm not mistaken, and then in Madison on June 30th, you're at the Edgewater Hotel.
Well, the Madison portion of the trip has been postponed because right after Milwaukee, I am flying to Venice, Italy, where I'm going to be the guest of honor at a barbecue festival in Italy. Now, something that's really interesting is happening in Europe, and that is that they are becoming barbecue obsessed. And you have barbecue teams and barbecue competitions and barbecue societies. It's absolutely phenomenal. It's not, you know, usually we take European food and make it our own. It's not often that we export our food to Europe, but the Italians are absolutely barbecue obsessed.
So, but the June 29th at Boswell Book Company, you will be there for that?
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, let's go to Brian in Oconomowoc. Brian, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hey, Larry, Stephen. Good to have you on there. I just wanted to have a chance to go back to barbecued baby back ribs. Caller earlier was talking about trying to get some good direction from you, and I think Stephen, you had mentioned that you really don't want to shoot for the fall off the bone variety, and I was just kind of wondering why that is. That's always been kind of my goal, but maybe that's not where I want to go.
Well, because I think the perfect rib will have a little resistance to it, a little chew to it. I mean, remember that barbecue is obviously about smoke flavor, the flavor of the smoke and the spice. It's about the incredible aroma of the sizzling meat and the smoke. But it's also about texture. And, you know, when you bite into rib, it shouldn't feel like oatmeal, you know? you are eating animal protein, and it should have a little resistance to it.
That's
how I feel in any case.
Well, Stephen, it has been a real joy talking with you today. I'll be going online to your site to get one of those meatball holders for sure.
Fantastic.
But I love your book, and thanks so much for talking with us today about your book and about smoking meats and other things as well.
Well, thank you, and a big thanks to all your listeners for calling in. I can see you have a very loyal and popular following, but, you know, when you're on tour, nothing gives me more pleasure than connecting with my actual readers and viewers.
Well, it's a great pleasure. Thanks again, Stephen.
Take care.
Bye-bye. Stephen Reichlein is a James Beard Award-winning authority on grilling and smoking. His book is called Project Smoke, I've enjoyed looking at the book, and I'm going to try some of the recipes in there for sure. It's going to be a lot of fun. The meatball recipe for sure. Oh my goodness me. Well, I tell you what, the photography in that book, in his cookbook is phenomenal. And maybe you've tried to take photos of food that you've prepared, or maybe you have other photography question. We're going to explore that coming up next. Jack Socha hasn't been with us a while, and he's back to talk about what's new in digital photography and to answer your photography questions. Next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.